Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you could make it this morning. I watched the most amazing 60 Minutes last night. I loved that show. And we've talked about a little bit of 60 Minutes on several different shows because I watch it all the time, and a lot of the information I pick up often comes from there. But last night, I was looking around for something before the Golden Globes came on, and I watched the end of 60 Minutes. And it was about the unforgettable people. And by that I mean the small percentage of us that never forget anything. And I mean that literally. These people can remember this day 10 years ago. They can, their memory can take them to a specific moment in time. And when they go back there, there was a 12-year-old boy or a 10-year-old boy on the show who some of the elders spoke to. Mary Lou Henner, for those of you who might remember her, she was in a Burt Reynolds sitcom. She was in Taxi. She was in a lot of shows when she was younger. She is one of those people who never forgets anything. And they talked about the fact that when they remember or when they think back to remember a specific thing, they always can, but it takes them right back to that place so that they smell the same smells, they can feel the same clothing that they have on, whether they're warm or cold, everything. It was amazing. But some of the things that they talked about with the 10-year-old, of course, he has a much shorter span to remember, but he was very cute and very personable. Anna brings Shelley in so she can talk with me about this. It was really something, though. Good morning, Shel. How are you?
Good morning, Renee. How are you?
I'm good. This show was amazing. I mean, 60 Minutes, as usual, covered quite a few things. But when they talked about this show, I was, or this I don't know what you would call it, a gift. In some cases,
well,
maybe it's not thought of as a gift.
Everybody has the ability to do that, so it's not really a gift. It's just that most people haven't developed that part of their brain. It's part of our brain capacity. That's why it fascinates me. I'm actually doing some brain research. Ron Ball has these DVD series out there called Brain Train. He's got Brain Train 1, 2, and I think he just released 3. And he studies a lot of these people like Daniel Pink and people like that who go in and do all these brain studies, and they're just fascinated with the inner workings of how our brain works from a computer standpoint, the function of it, not the thought processes of the mind, but actually the function of the brain, and the fact that we only use maximum like 10% of our brain, and there's so much untapped, and then you find these people with these what we would consider gifts, and they're maybe using 11 or 12% of their brain. So we really don't know the full capacity of what we can do. And these type of people are just tapping into just a little bit more than us, and they can do such extraordinary things. You know, the show I talk about, the character I talk about, Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory, that character has what's called an identical memory. And that character on that show can do exactly what you're talking about. Nobody can ever argue with him about anything that's happened in the past because he remembers stuff from when he was 6 years old. And like you said, he remembers what he was wearing, what time of day a particular thing happened. And so here, you know, I mean, it's not a real life person. You were seeing real life people, but that's how I came to learn about that gift, if you want to call it, was from that character on the show, because his character can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently 3 years ago on 60 Minutes, they reported that only 6 people that they knew of had highly superior autobiographical memory. Today, 50 people have come forward, including Mary Lou Henner and this adorable 10-year-old. So it was he was just adorable, smiley, cute little guy. He said, the mom said at one point in time, he got up one morning and he said, last year this was really a bad day. And his mom said, what do you mean? This is when they first started realizing what he was capable of doing. And, of course, at 10, you don't really develop something. You either have it or you don't have it. So
right.
He said, Dad was really mad at me last year on this day. He yelled at me.
Oh.
And the father and the mother, of course, were like, you know, and no mom wants to hear that. No dad wants to hear that. I mean, we know we yell at our kids, but we don't want to think that for a year our kid has been thinking about us yelling at him for some silly little thing. But they interviewed all of them, and it was incredibly interesting. One of the, Leslie on the show, featured 6 people with super memories 3 years ago. We now know that there are 50 who can virtually remember every day of their own lives. They interviewed the first child known to science, who is Jake Hausler. And now at 10, he meets Mary Lou Henner and the other people with highly superior autobiographical memory. They tell Leslie that they relive these memories, can smell them, and can almost feel the clothes they wore on those days, like they were there yesterday. When Jake's parents heard about the 60 Minutes story, they contacted Dr. James McGow of the University of California, Irvine, the scientist studying the phenomena. Like other unforgettable adults, Jake's brain scan shows a more active pathway between the front and the back of his brain. The reason they can do that, in part, might be because the different parts of the brain have greater access to each other. In other words, there's a connection in there someplace that there might not necessarily be in everybody else's. So, Mary Lou Henner, she said, you can ask me, you know, 3 years ago on this date, what were you doing? And she said, it doesn't even take me any time. I remember what I ate. I remember everything. So they tested a couple of the people on 60 Minutes. They did. They had this doctor on, and he did like a month. I guess it was like about a month. It appeared to be when they said the times of testing. And he and the woman that's on the show, I never can remember her name. She might be, what was the other name that I gave? No, I don't remember her name. She's the blonde. She hasn't been on it for, it used to be Barbara Walters, but now it's her, Leslie Stahl. Maybe that's her name.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, I was drawing a blank too, because I don't watch the show that often.
Mm-hmm. And
when you say that, I recognize the name, yeah.
Right. And they did some testing. And the first 3 or 4 days, they remembered everything fairly well, you know. But then when it got into a week to 10 days of going back, you know, 7 to 10 days, they failed miserably. And cute little part of the show, it said, they said to her, you completely forgot Thursday and Friday of last week. Completely forgot it. And she's got to be in her 60s, you know, easily. And she said, and everybody on the show laughed because I was with all my, you know, my teammates here on the show, and we were doing something for work. We were taping a show. And she says, I didn't remember any of it. She says, once I get, you know, once you remind me, then it's pretty good. Then I can, you know, then I can kind of remember everything.
So you're
but
saying that
they
were talking to the newscaster that this wasn't one
right.
of the people with the eidetic memories that failed this.
Mm-mm.
You're talking about the when you say her, you mean Leslie Stahl.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay.
This was something
that this doctor
this doctor did this testing with just regular people who don't claim to
have superior memory. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because she she was very cute. She got a big kick out of it. She said, most of the time I think that I'm, I have a pretty good memory. And the guy said, but he says, nobody ever asks you. You know, you're a grown woman. Nobody says to you, what'd you have for breakfast last Tuesday? You know? And
right.
It's shocking. So I'm sitting by myself and I'm watching this show. And I went back to Friday and thought to myself, okay, what did I do all day Friday? And I really had to think about it, Shelley. I really, really had to think about it.
I know. I do the same thing. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's like, well, you know, one of the reasons why, because one of the things that people don't understand, and again, this is something I'm learning with all these brain and memory studies that I'm doing, is that our memories work by image and emotion. So when you have a particular image or sensory input, I should say, it doesn't always have to be an image. It could be a smell or something like that. But we work on sensory input linked with emotion. So the normal minute by minute things that we do all day, we're most people are so distracted where they're doing something automatically and they're thinking of something else. So for most people, and I think a lot of people listening to this will identify with this, we do so many things routinely that a lot of times we're not present. And what I mean by that is that we're not really thinking about the thing we're doing. We're thinking about the next three or four things we have to be doing into the future, and what we're doing is almost automated, kind of routine. That's one of the reasons why our memories don't work efficiently, because we're never really in the moment of what we're doing. The other thing is that generally our memories work through images and emotion. So you'll remember the peaks of the day. You'll remember something that's wrapped around some kind of an emotional response. But if you're just going on and you're like even, you're not sad, you're not happy, there's no intense emotion wrapped around it, it's really not getting recorded in that frontal part of your memory that you can recall like at a second, you know. So it is interesting. It's curious to me that these people are able to remember even the mundane things, you know, that precisely, you know, like this character Sheldon I'm talking about, he can remember what time of day something happened, what shirt he was wearing 10 years ago, you know.
Well, that's how these people all are. Yeah, that's exactly the kind of memory.
And he's always correct, by the way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you do need to remember testing somebody like that is kind of difficult because there's usually not anybody else in the room that can remember those things. So I think
that. So there really are ways to test them. They never be able to, you know, if they can find a picture that was taken at a particular time of day and then ask the person, what were you doing on this day at this time or whatever, you know, without them having the ability to look through all their albums and stuff. There are ways of really going back decades and quizzing them at a particular time and date just through a photo.
Well, I don't mean that you can't ask them. I just mean that you can't verify. I mean,
that's where the pictures
their
are coming
memory.
From.
That's what I'm saying.
There is a way,
you know. Yeah, but you can say anything you want to about a picture. You could show me a picture, and I could make up a story. I could say, that was at my school dance in eighth grade, and I did this, and I did that.
No, you don't understand what I'm saying. Don't show them the picture. Take pictures of somebody from 10 or 20 years earlier. Somebody's supposed to have this gift. You know you have a picture that was taken on a particular day and time, and you just ask them out of the blue, what were you doing on this date and time, and see if they say they were wearing the clothes that you're looking at this picture. I'm not saying show them the picture. I'm saying
see
what I'm saying? So you have a picture. You know what clothes they were wearing, and you know where they were and who they were with of something that happened decades earlier. Now you ask them what they were doing at that date and time and see if they remember. That would be a way of testing these people. So there is actually a way of going back decades and seeing if their memory is really that accurate.
Well, like I say, it's I found it to be remarkable. And when they asked the 10-year-old boy, they said, well, how do you feel about this? This is kind of special. Do you like it or do you hate it? He says, oh, no, I like it. I like it. He grinned from ear to ear. He was really, really cute little guy. And he said, it's kind of fun, you know, now that I understand it, too. So, but I was surprised to see only 50. That, I mean, that seems like a incredibly tiny number in
the world of millions.
I'm sure there are more that have that gift
that probably don't realize it's something noteworthy. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure it'd be more than 50, but I also don't think it's common either. So it doesn't surprise me that it's rare. But I don't think it's that rare.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask a question. And when you were watching the show, did they talk about, did they make any comparisons between this particular memory pattern and having like a photographic memory? Now, photographic memory is not autobiographical. It's not around timelines. You know, you're not going to wear a shirt you were wearing 10 years ago, but it also is a different type of memory than most people have, where somebody can literally flip through a book, close the book, and then you can say what's on page 358, and they'll be able to start reciting a paragraph after really just glancing at the page. Did they make any correlation between that memory and this memory? Did they even talk about it?
Not that I saw, but like I said, I tuned in to the second half of it, and it was the doctor and Leslie talking about, you know, the test that they had done together. And so I don't know whether they tried to compare those two gifts or not. I didn't see anything like that, but that would be interesting to know. But
extraordinary.
What I did find... Yeah, I know some people that have, I don't know that they've got total recall like that, but I do know some people who've got incredible memories. I know a lot more that have really awful memories, to be honest with you, but I do know a few people that are, people always say to me, well, my girlfriends, as we were growing up, I tell stories and they're like, God, how do you remember that? I don't remember any of that. And but again, you know, the difference here, I think, the memories that these people shared or the total recall that these people all shared that I watched last night was different. We talk a lot about interpretation and your side and my side of a story and things like that. But they go into detail, and it's always about themselves. It's not so much total memory about somebody else, hence the word, I guess, autobiographical. But it really just pertains to them. It doesn't, like they do talk about what they smell, which only you can say what you're smelling, what clothes they have on, only you can say that, and the feelings that you had in the moment, like the little boy saying it was a bad day for me because Daddy yelled at me.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so it really is pinpointed at you personally. So there couldn't really be the kind of discussion about, like if I remembered something from you and I 10 years ago and I said, and then you said this, and you go, no, that's not what I said. I said this. Well, in my memory, you said this to me. So the little boy didn't say either, by the way, what Daddy said to him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say the exact words or anything like that, nor did they ask him that. He just said, Dad yelled at me, and it was a bad day for me. And he just said it out of the blue.
Did they ever use the word identical memory in
no.
the show? In the portion? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because again, I'm just going with this because a lot of things in Big Bang Theory are based on truisms, you know, as far as the different fields that these guys are in, you know, the physics and the engineering and things like that. But in his particular case, in his eidetic memory, he not only can he remember about himself, but he remembers about anybody that it was with him dealing with him. So he would remember what everybody was wearing, not just him, and he would remember because he always because people try to get out of things, and he says, "Oh no, no, 10 years ago you said this, you know, so you know you're being a hypocrite now," or like he calls people out because he remembers everything they said. And once he brings it out, they're like, "Oh, I forgot I said that. You're right," you know. And he's always correcting people, you know. But so I'm wondering how much of that is real and how much of that is just kind of like made up for the character.
Well, I'm sure there's some, you know, there's some edification by the powers that be on that show because that show is pretty far out there. And I think that, I mean, I think it's based on fact, but it's also embellished to make, of course, him the that young man has won how many awards for that character? Because he's like so totally eclectic. I mean, he's like totally different from anybody you're ever going to meet. And of course, they've taken you know, they've taken him and made him into this very strange young man. So even though I think the idea is based on fact, well, because we're talking about that today, but having only 50 people, like I said, and I'm sure there are more. Maybe now that people are talking about it, more people will come forward, like this little boy, the parents of this little boy, bringing him on the show and having him share that he has this ability. Do you remember years ago, I was trying to remember the name of Indigo Children. Remember when everybody was talking about it? I want to say it was like 2004, 2005. We had a few guests at the Institute who were all wrapped up in that. And there were some discussions around the pool and, you know, how they'd all get together. And they were all coming to me, talking to me about Indigo Children. Are you familiar with all of that?
Yes, yes.
And wasn't that they were like incredibly intelligent or not mystical, but very deep?
Well, I think there was a mystical aspect to it. They were supposed to be very spiritually connected, very self-aware, very connected with the bigger plan, that kind of thing. You know, they would have like gifts like you know, extra sensitivities, being able to be more aware of things around them. I don't know that it would ever have, I don't know that they would have eidetic memories like what we're talking about now, or autobiographical memories. But yeah, they were supposed to be, they were supposed to be connected to the bigger plan for us as humans here in our spiritual role, because we are spiritual beings having physical experiences, and I think Indigo Children was more wrapped around that, around the spiritual experience.
Well, that's kind of what I remember. I remember that that there was a lot of talk about them. Well, their spirituality and their what was the other word I was just going to use? I remember somebody saying to me they were. I don't know. They were like deeper, not smarter, but more. I don't know. I don't remember the word that was used, but I remember that, you know, everybody that was there at that particular during that 3 week period of guests. They were all talking about it. And I remember doing a little bit of research about it, but I didn't do enough so that it really stuck with me, speaking of bad memories. So maybe we could research on that a little bit, because I thought that that was a very interesting conversation when everybody was telling
about it. Did they ever talk on the show of people that have maybe partial autobiographical memory? I mean, are there degrees of this, or you either have it or you don't? The reason I'm saying that is...
Have it or you don't is what I got, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because like with me, I don't have a photographic memory, but I have what's called a partial photographic memory. If I look at something, especially if it has handwriting on it, I will always be able to recall that image instantaneously. If it's just print, like people that have photographic memories, they can look at pages with print on it, and they'll at a glance record the entire page. I can't do that. But if I'm looking at something, because I used to do this with schematics and drawings. This is when I first realized I could do it. And if I'm looking at something and I've made a handwritten note on it, for some reason, to this day, I can recall drawings like that from 25 years ago when I was working at that aerospace company and I used to have to look at prints and stuff. I can still recall some of them in my head if I think about it. I was like, oh, yeah, now I remember what that thing looked like. But there had to have been some handwritten notes. So I don't know why that had to be there, but any time I had a drawing with a handwritten note on it, I could recall it, and to this day I can still record it. Somehow it got locked in there. And I know a couple other people who have partial photographic memories in specific ways. Like, that's the specific way I can do it, but I can't do it with other things, you know. But that always was a curiosity to me, that that's something that's unique that I have an ability to do, but it's just that little tiny piece of it.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because I was just talking about this to one of the grandchildren the other day. Years ago in Ithaca, there was a little newspaper. It's still there. It's evolved quite a bit, but it was called The Grapevine. And they did a story about me at the restaurant that I worked at Zorba's Restaurant. And I started working for the Greeks in their restaurants at the Rosebud. I worked for a very, very long time, and then I started working at Zorba's, which was all Greek cuisine, in the evenings. And Zorba's became, Rosebud was very popular, but Zorba's became incredibly popular because it was really homemade Greek food. And I never wrote anything down, Shelley. I could have the entire dining room full and know. At the end of the night, you could say to me, remember the couple that sat over there in booth 5 at around, you know, like 7:30? Do you remember what they had? Yes, I could remember what everybody had. And how I would do it is I would picture looking at their face while I always had to look at their face. When I trained other waitresses, I said, don't look at your pad when you're taking an order because you won't remember where the food goes.
Wow.
And there are other tricks to teach waitresses so that when they come back to your table, they don't have to say, okay, who had the Reuben, who had the cheeseburger? You know, you remembered where to put the food, right?
Right.
So I didn't know I had that ability, but the Greeks were tough. And in working at the Rosebud, it was very, very, very fast-paced. There were only 13 booths and a counter. And many times I worked it by myself. And sometimes each booth would have 4 people in them. So that's a lot of people to take care of at one time. And it would be, like I said, very, very busy, a diner busy. And people on lunch hour, people on mini break, so you didn't have time to not take care of them. So writing, you know, like time wasting. So I taught myself, because I didn't like getting yelled at by Nick and John, the owners, I taught myself to remember what everybody had, and I did that by looking at their face. And if I couldn't remember what they had, I conjured up their face in my mind's eye and heard them telling me their order again.
That's fascinating. And a lot of times that's how our memories work. Like I said, on some of these studies that I'm reading right now, if you take an etiquette class, one of the things you're taught is that, you know, when you're in business, you go to business meetings or conferences and you meet 20 people. Well, by the end of the evening, 9 times out of 10, you don't remember any of the people that you met, you know. And that's like a big deal. If you remember somebody's name, if you meet somebody at the beginning of the evening, and then as you leave at the evening, you call them by your name, say, oh, it was very nice meeting you, John, or it was very nice meeting you, Mary, and you shake their hand, that impresses people. Because most of the time, you know, you make your introduction, by the end of the evening, nobody remembers anybody else. So what they teach in etiquette class is that when you're introduced to somebody, say their name 3 times looking at their face, exactly what you just said. You say, you know, hello, I'm John. Well, it's very nice to meet you, John. So what is it that you do, John? And then as you're departing, say, well, it was very nice meeting you, John. Maybe we'll catch up later. If you say their name three times within a short span of time of meeting them, looking at their face, you will remember their name. And I've tried that a couple of times, and it works. It's fascinating, you know, because that's one of my issues. I remember numbers very easily, but I don't remember people's names, and it's embarrassing because it's not that I'm not interested, but evidently it's not just a problem with me. It's a problem with a lot of people. It's people just don't remember people's names. So that's something that they teach you, and once you've said their name three times looking at their face, and you put it in sentences, not just John, but oh, well, John, it was nice meeting you. What do you do for a living, John? And, you know, things like that. You make comments, including their name. You are now recording it. And after the third time, you've actually made, like, a permanent memory of them. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. And I believe that that's true. I also believe, of course, there has to be a conscious interest and effort to remember things like that. Now, I'm going to tell you, I no longer can do what I did when I was younger like that. The kids pick on me, Graham, how'd you forget that? And I'm like, because I used up all my memory the first 15 years waiting on table, I think. Because it's just, I know it's not important anymore. So
right.
as things become less significant in your life, you just don't utilize it. But at that point in time, it was real important to me. It made me a good living, and I enjoyed it, and I kind of made it a game. But even today, I know that if I'm trying to remember specifically what somebody has said to me or how they worded it or the look on their face, I can still conjure up somebody's face in my mind's eye and listen to them talk to me. So I've asked a lot of other people, can you do that? And my husband says he can't. Although he can remember places, he can visualize taking a trip and looking around in his mind's eye and see that there's a CVS on the far right corner, or there's a Winn-Dixie as you're driving up. He remembers all that stuff. I never remember that stuff. But he can do that, but he can't do it with faces.
Wow,
strange,
that's amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do with interested in, too.
You know, like we're talking about here, and we're each explaining that we have, like, different things that impress our memory, for lack of a better way of putting it. There are different things that impress upon our memories. Like with me, it's certain types of architectural drawings. I don't know why, but just is with me. That's how my brain works. But I've also noticed I also have a keen memory for numbers. I remember when I was a purchasing agent, a year later somebody could come up to me and say, hey, you know, whatever happened with that order, whatever, and I would just blurt out the order number, and I hadn't touched it in a year. Numbers and drawings. But I'm talking about, like, not picture drawings. I'm talking about, like, schematics and design drawings.
Right.
Recall easily. The other thing you're saying about faces, I'm not that way with the interaction with people, but I've noticed that if I'm watching, like movie stars and things like that, I will see an actor or an actress in a movie where they look very, very different than a show that I'm watching them on, like a regular show on TV, and I'll be watching this movie, and I'll say, oh, my God, there's something so familiar about that person just because of an expression they made, an expression or a glance, and it'll haunt me until I can figure out where I've seen them, and there'll be, like, one expression they make in their eyes or the way they smile or something. Meanwhile, they look totally different in this movie because they've been made up, you know, and yet I'm able to figure out who it is just because of an expression they make, and then it ties into. So I have a little bit of that, but I don't do it on normal interactions with people day to day. So it's interesting how each one of us, our memory is tapping into different elements that caught our attention for one reason or another, and then that's able to bring that memory back at a later time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think. A lot of these kind of assets or gifts or whatever you want to call them, only have meaning if we give them meaning. I think there's probably a lot of people out there that maybe since toddlerhood have been able to remember things or been able to picture things that happened to them and things like that. And because nobody's ever talked about it with them, they don't realize that it's something special that they could be honing in on. It's just like people who believe in, you know, being here before, reincarnation. When you're really little, we've talked about this before with a couple of my grandchildren, things that they said to me at a very, very young age. Now I ask them, they don't remember what I'm talking about. They don't.
Wow.
Nothing stays with them, because I think the only time, what's that old saying, if you don't use it, you lose it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that in a lot of cases, there are many things that we are born with, many, many gifts that we are born with. But unless we're in the right circumstance, we don't hone them. We don't develop them. We don't bring them to the place where that they're going to stay with us for the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at people who, at a very, very young age, like little girls, you get a little girl who dances and sings all the time. She's two. And she just dances and sings, and everything is showtime, and every show that's on television where somebody's dancing and singing mesmerizes her. And mom and dad don't have enough money to send her for any kind of lessons or do anything with her to enhance that, you know, that gift that she already has for not being afraid to sing and dance. So she doesn't develop it and never does anything with it. And she just knows as she's an adult and she's in her 30s all of a sudden that, you know, she's always enjoyed dancing. She's always enjoyed singing. She's always enjoyed this. But she never became really good at it because there was no development of it. I think there's lots of things like that that we have that if they go, unplanted, so to speak, they don't grow. And I think that this memory thing may have something to do with that, because I do think, like you said, we all have amazing things that we start off with. And it's been common knowledge now for years that only certain parts of our brains do anything for us. The rest of it just sits up there like a big gray mass. So, and there are people that go from a vegetative state from some kind of injury. And if they're with the right people who get what needs to be done, they get okay again. They start functioning again. So
cases, the doctors can't explain how the person maintained their cognitive abilities because they really thought that they were, you know, that they were like you said, in a vegetative state. Medical science doesn't believe a person can come back from that, and yet we know that there's a couple that have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure we know that. For sure we know that that there are things that people can do that they don't tap into. And I think that it's sad because we should be able to. We should be able to tap into everything. You know, that would be the perfect world if we could, if we could tap into everything that we know. But very sadly, that's not the case. One of the other amazing, sweet, kind of sweet and sad stories that I came across last night is about a little girl. 12 years old. Her name was Taylor Smith, and she got pneumonia and died. The pneumonia, progressed, and there was nothing they could do. So this family, mom and dad and a little brother, lost this 12-year-old girl. So they're dealing with the death of their child, and comes time to clean up her room and get things in order, and you know, give away some of her things, all the things that people do when they lose somebody. And they found a letter. They found a letter to self from Taylor. And she wrote it when she was 12, and she was supposed to read it when she was 22. She was addressing herself in the letter as a 22-year-old. And they didn't put the whole letter online for me to read, because I guess there was some personal stuff and some stuff that was unimportant. But in essence, it was really, really beautiful, and it said things like, you know, did you go to school? Did you graduate? If you didn't, go back to school and graduate. You need to do that. I hope you are going to go to college. I mean, beautiful stuff.
Aww.
Yep. Okay. So the whole thing is, I guess, is that 12 years old, who would believe a 12-year-old would be thinking that far ahead, first of all? I wasn't thinking about anything like that when I was 12. And then to have her write it, and to already be reprimanding the 22-year-old. That's what tickled me the
just
most.
Just in case.
Just in case at 22 that she had messed up, she was already reprimanding herself.
Is this something that was recently in the news, or this is just something that came across the internet, but it's dated? Do you know when it actually...
I didn't retain that information, speaking of memories,
okay.
But it was recently. It wasn't something that happened a long time ago. It was recently. But it just tickled me that you know, she said things like, you know, we wanted to do this. I hope we did it. And we wanted to do that, and I hope we found time to do that. And if we didn't, let's do it now. Things like that. It was beautiful. It was really beautiful. And it made me think, you know, that would be fun to do as a group of really, really close friends or close family, and write together letters to ourself. I'm 65. I don't know if I want to wait 10 years to open it. I may not be around. But, like, say 5 years from now and read a letter, even a year from now. It would be fun. Because there's things you and I are trying to do right now, and things that we want to accomplish right now,
right,
and then
right.
Read it a year later and see. I mean, I guess you could do that with a journal, but I loved the fact that she addressed herself, you know, like a second person would address
mm-hmm.
herself.
Yeah, that's unique, and that does make it kind of fun to read it. You know, that she was talking
mm-hmm.
to herself.
Mm-hmm. Well, and mom and dad, of course, are treasuring it, you know, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it shows her connectedness with things, that at 12 years old, she was already, like, mapping her own future out. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. I thought it was really something. I was so, when I first started reading it, I was like, she did what? And I went back and read it again, and I thought, oh, my God, that is like, I mean, what a treasure for the parents to have now, for one thing, help them get through their loss. That is beautiful in itself. And I think that at the end of the day, it would be lovely to have anything like that from yours, especially when you lose a child like that, you know. By the way, I haven't been able to really collect any new news about the young
Johnny.
Girl. With the tonsillectomy. So I don't know what the deal is with that. but I'm hoping to find out something before tomorrow morning's show. I will do a little bit more searching and maybe even call a couple of my media friends to see if anybody knows anything, because I found it strange that it just kind of like got dropped, you know. I was
surprised that she survived the ambulance drive up there. I mean, I know, because I don't, unless I misunderstood the story or they didn't cover that, but it didn't sound like she was on a ventilator, like she was just on oxygen, and I'm not understanding how she could not be on, unless that's wrong, and there was some sort of a ventilator-type equipment in the ambulance that transported her, but I'm not understanding how she survived the ambulance ride to New York. That would have been a long drive.
We don't know for sure that it ended up being New York. We knew that New York had offered a place.
Yeah, but even around the corner, even a half an hour.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
When you take somebody off a ventilator, and that's what was keeping them going, they're usually gone in moments, in minutes, mm-hmm. even if it was around town. Again, like I said, unless there's something on an ambulance that acts like a ventilator and she still was getting this artificial support. So hopefully they'll clarify that at some point.
Well, I hope so, too. I hope that we are able to find out something. I will research that today. In the next couple days, I'm going to be really, really busy, so I'm going to try to have Monica back on the show, and I was hoping you could do some research on those hearing aids that you told me about.
Oh, the cochlear implants, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me see what I can find out.
So that we can share that with everybody. And I also, last week, even recap day got really crowded because we got deep in conversation about a myriad of things. And then, of course, we had the day when Shaquita called us, which was great. I'm going to have her talk on the show again soon, I hope, to keep her magazine afloat. Yeah, and she's got major problems that I read on Facebook today, so I'm hoping she reaches out to us again. But one of the things that I wanted to tell everybody, and I started talking about it the other day, we have about 10 minutes left, so I want to say this. When I first started the show, I would go to the computer and go on Google or Bing or whatever search engine seemed to be flashing on my screen the most ardently, and I would put in bullying. I would put in kids, stories about schools, and I would be bombarded by things all over the world. And the biggest thing that I was seeing was, of course, suicide. And that's, of course, what got us started on this and realizing that we had to give this bullying thing some real credence, that it wasn't just about a kid coming home with a black eye or getting a swirly or something like that. We were hurting kids to the extent that they were taking their own lives. So recently we've had some really good shows, and there's been some things front and center on the news that we could talk about. But last week I had a few minutes to myself in here in my office, and I went on like I did in the very beginning and started researching bullying. And the first 20 or better comments about bullying were about the two football players. And I was like, you're kidding me. I mean, they're still talking about the little girl who jumped to her death after being bullied by the two girls that were thrown out of school and told that they couldn't go to any school in that county. And then the executor to all the schools, I can't remember what he's called, but remember he overthrew the judge's ruling. And that was Rebecca Sedgwick, who was, you know, just bombarded. And even after her mom took her out of the school, these same two girls just, you know, bullied her continuously, and she jumped off of a building to her death. But everything else I saw was Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin, because they were being mean to each other out on the football field. And I sat here, and I looked at the screen, and I thought to myself, I am ashamed that this is getting all this media. Ashamed. Two grown men can't come to grips with the fact that they're talking badly about each other. I mean, give me a break. But there were no stories, and I took this as good news, there were no stories about any young kids, nothing. So maybe kids are getting it and realizing that if you do something to hurt yourself, it's over, it's the end, because I think a lot of kids don't quite get that. They're immersed in the drama, and they don't realize that taking their own life really, truthfully, honestly, no holds barred means you're gone. And maybe all of this conscious effort to bring the awareness to everybody has finally helped.
I think there's definitely more awareness right now, but unfortunately, I don't think that a lot of the powers that be, like school officials and adults, are handling it properly yet. I think all the attention on it is almost having the pendulum swing too far the other way now, because things are getting into the limelight and being classified as bullying that really aren't. You know, not everything that's bad behavior is bullying.
Exactly, that's true.
Right. Some of the things that can create bully behavior can also create other types of poor behavior, but bullying is a very specific thing. And just because somebody's rude to you doesn't mean they're bullying you. It, you know, you have rude people, you have inconsiderate people, you have irresponsible people. That's not bullying. You know, bullying is a specific thing. And if somebody lays their hands on you, that's not bullying, that's criminal. So this is one of the things that Izzy talks about, and I agree with him, is that too many things are put under the bully umbrella, and it kind of loses its emphasis. True bullying can be dealt with behaviorally, psychologically, just by you interacting with the bully differently and putting yourself in control. Where when you're talking about other types of behavior, you know, that's like, you know, somebody's coming up and they punch you or they shove you into your locker at school, that's now transcending bullying. That's turning into assault, that's getting into criminal behavior, and that should be dealt with differently, and it's not. It's all seen as kind of like all lumped together. So that I'm not seeing, and the reason I'm saying that, although I'm happy that we haven't heard of any recent tragedies, and I hope that trend continues, that kids are dealing with it better, I'm not seeing that school officials are dealing. There was an incident in my family recently where a teenager was not dealt with appropriately. The teenager was the one being bullied, and yet she was the one that got admonished, and the kids that were bullying her, which is a group of six. How can a group of six be bullied by one person? I mean, it doesn't even make sense. But she was called on the carpet, and I don't know that anything was ever done to the group of six girls that reported her for bullying them, which is ludicrous. And then when you talk to her, they were trying to bully her, and she just didn't play back, and they got pissed off. So they reported her because they were just trying to cause heartache. And so here it is. You have a group of kids using this whole bullying oversensitivity to try and hurt another individual, and instead of the school officials looking at it for what it was and saying, well, how does one person bully the six? That doesn't even make sense. They just ran with it and threatened to suspend the single person, which it, to me, is mind-bogglingly inappropriate.
Yeah, well, and like I said before, I'm not saying that there's not any bullying. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that there is less repercussions from it. That's what I'm saying. There's not
and that
so
I
much,
believe in because, Because of all the attention, because of the bully movie, because there's so many conversations about it. Yeah, that I agree with.
Well, and you've got, you know, you've got the fact that I think, like I said, kids are understanding now what, you know, I think when you're 12, Shell, you still don't quite get death. You don't quite understand the finality of death. Because remember, when you're really young, you grow up on cartoons and television programs where, I mean, even if we go back to our era, Wile E. Coyote should be, you know, have been reincarnated about a million times, right? So
right.
It's, you know, death, or let's say you are a little bit more astute child and you're watching your favorite show with Grandma and Grandpa on Saturday night, like what happened to me when I was a kid. I'm watching Bonanza with my Grandma and Grandpa, and I had heard everybody say that Hoss died. And I was very upset about that because he was one of my favorite characters on Bonanza. And that Saturday night, we watched Bonanza, and there's Hoss.
Right.
So I remember saying to my grandma, "Grandma, I thought everybody said he died." And my grandmother said, "Well, he did, and I just think it's terrible that they keep putting him on this show." Now, she just meant that they kept showing reruns, but I thought somebody had the ability to take him from death and put him on the show.
Yeah, I actually remember that, too. I was a big fan of Bonanza when I was young, and I remember when Hoss died, I was shocked. So, yeah, I remember that whole thing, too. But, yeah, I see what you're saying. And then think of all the video games today that, you
yep.
know, where... You know, where you can get killed in a video game, and then, but if you have enough extra life, then you select one of your lives and you're back in the game. So kids are really given a lot of mixed messages, and, you know, it may sound overly simplistic, but it makes them feel immortal and like death really isn't death ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's my point exactly. So if you are, like most of the kids that took their lives, I mean, there was a few that were over the age of 16 that we've read about over the past year, but a lot of them were really young. I've never been able to get past the 11-year-old up here in Jupiter. I cannot wrap my brain around an 11-year-old, first of all, having the gumption to take their own lives. But it happened a lot more than I don't even know if other people pay attention to things like that, like you and I have. But it was horrific there for a while. And every time you picked up a paper, or every time you watched the 5 o'clock news, there was another one. And it has slowed down. And I want to knock on wood, and I want to say I'm not bragging about that. I am just stating up a fact. If all the Google sites, the Bing sites, all the travel engines only wanted to show me about Incognito and the other guy, that means nothing else is going on, and that's a good sign.
Right.
And for whatever reasons, I'm grateful. But I suspect that even though the bullying, the picking on, will probably never come to a standstill because it's us, it's the people, it's the human beings that, you know, that keep that alive, maybe we're finally getting through to the kids so that they understand that that's not the answer, is the point I'm making. I don't think bullying has stopped by any stretch of the imagination. I just think the reactions have gotten back into the realm of reality, you know?
Yep.
So,
totally agree with that.
Show's almost over. I wanna thank everybody for stopping by. I wanted to real quick read this that came to me from Joel this morning. I love Joel. He's been on the show before. Peace. It does not mean to be in a place where there is no noise, trouble, or hard work. It means to be in the midst of all those things and still be calm in your heart. Isn't that beautiful?
Yes, that is beautiful.
So that's what I'd like to send everybody out there with today, try to stay calm in your own heart and keep everything in perspective, and have a great day. And Shell and I will be back tomorrow morning, so I hope you'll join us. God bless everybody. Bye-bye. Bye, Shell.
Bye, Rainey. Bye, everyone. We'll speak to you in the morning.